Okay, it's 12 o'clock. It looks like it's time to start, and welcome to Flux on EAS. But before we get started, we will be having fun with real audio today, so if anyone has active radio transmitters in the room, I'd ask that you turn them off, because we don't want any inadvertent hot audio being transmitted. It's 12 o'clock. Do you know where your tower is? This was a tower that we had about 350 square feet worth of antenna load on it, and it got hit by a 90 mile per hour wind gust and actually snapped the bolts, destroyed the tower footing, and knocked the tower off of the mountain 600 feet to its death. Hi, my name is Matt Crick. My voice is my passport. Verify me. Some people, if this were the Matrix, I would go by the hacker alias DC Flux. The DC is a reference to direct current, not DEFCON. And by DC Flux, it's actually AC. I'm a video editor by trade, and I'm also a broadcast engineer. Been so for about 10 years now. And I'm also licensed to transmit, and you can be too. Come on up tomorrow at noon to Skybox 206, where we will be giving amateur radio testing. So, we're here to talk about warning systems. This one tells you where you're going. This one tells you where you are. These two tell you where you were. First, we'll start with CONELRAD, which was the Control of Electronic Radiation. That existed from 1951 to 1963, and we also liked it because it started and began with CD, as you know, with Civil Defense, and kind of sounded like a good appliance name. And that required all FM, TV, and most AM stations to sign off. This was in the event of a nuclear catastrophe, so we could warn everybody that bombs were coming. And some AM stations were required to broadcast on 640 kilohertz or 1240 kilohertz. And all radios made during this time were required by law to have little triangles that would denote where you were supposed to tune during a alert. Or, you know, if the radio station you were listening to went off air, that was an indication that you tune around and find the channel of interest that your alert information would come from. And that was signified by the transmitter carrier of the station would drop for 5 seconds, turn on for 5 seconds, and then off for 5 seconds, then 20 seconds of 1,000 hertz alert tone, which sounds like. The real concept behind the 640 kilohertz and 1240 kilohertz tuning was theoretically Russian missiles had the ability to home in on AM radio stations. And back in those days, most AM stations had a specific frequency for every town. So you could home in on, that was the theory, you send these missiles out to home in on specific AM stations. But the problem with that is, to do the real-time direction calculations and bearing as the thing is in flight, you need your average Woolen-Weber-style AN-FRD-10-HF direction finding array, such as this one located at the Naval Security Group in San Diego, California. But it probably would be a, if you sort of aim the missile right, you probably could build a detector that would set it off while it was over it, but that won't account for any in-flight wind gusts or stuff. But then again, back in those days, if the missile went off 30 miles outside of its target, it was considered a hit. Okay, and the problem with the system is it subjected the transmitter at the station to the Conelrad stress test, as engineers of the day like to refer to it as. So this led to transmitter power supply failure, because your average 50,000 watt transmitter really doesn't like being turned on and off very fast. And if it did, you'd probably blow the fuse at the local power substation, or you'd forget to switch into the secondary PI network, and the output of the transmitter could fail. The carrier tubes could fail, and the modulator tubes could fail. So the big problem was a lot of people didn't pay attention to Conelrad alerts because they didn't want their transmitter blowing up. And then we replaced Conelrad with the emergency broadcast system. Just so happens, I have an emergency broadcast system hot box here. Not a whole lot to it. Pretty much it's a couple of tone decoders and a couple of encoders and some relays. We'll have that up here if you'd like to take photographs. So we introduced the two-tone alert, as everyone's known, 853 and 960 hertz for 20 to 25 seconds. And the problem with the system was it required 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, manned stations to relay alerts. Because all it would do is signal that an alert was present, and it would be up to the operator to read from a card as to what type of level alert it was. And we also had the EBS stress test, which wasn't quite as bad as the Conelrad stress test, but people ignored it because stuff failed anyways. This system did have some security. Like, I was digging through the files at the station the other day, and I found, still sealed in a red envelope, your for official use only EAS authentication list, which it's 98, so that was... They still issued these, but after 95, they changed the name from EBS to EAS. So, if this were 10 years ago, August 9th, the activation for today would be Victor Mike, and the termination for today would be Quebec Alpha. Okay, so... the modern system, which we're currently using today, is the Emergency Alert System, or EAS for short. 97 to present is when it was officially implemented, but we started rolling out the program in 94. And it is currently administered by FEMA, FCC, and NOAA. And this was where we introduced the same encoded digital message headers, which is, this was actually NOAA technology, but we liked it so much that the only thing we did was change the attention tone for EAS. So, as you know, EAS uses... Now, when it's the same alert, it uses 1050 hertz. So this signifies that it is a weather alert issued by the National Weather Service. And the best thing is, it's fully automated. So that meant that stations no longer had to staff 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Like at our station, we have a live DJ 4 hours out of a 20-hour day. And the nice thing that happened with EAS is we could have a lot more alerts. But the ones we really care about are emergency action notification, emergency action termination, National Information Center, and National Periodic Test. Although these are rare, and no one's pretty much seen any of the three, except for EAN, which is the one that has inadvertently been transmitted, because I understand some guy put in a telephone line somewhere and he left it open and it inadvertently triggered a dial-up network that I understand was restricted to the Chicago area. And other less important roles that is what it's commonly used for, but by the government these are considered entirely secondary roles, are the NOAA weather alerts, the recent addition of Amber Alerts, and local emergencies. So, who's got to participate? Every AM, FM, TV, and digital television station, and Class A television stations, and low-power television stations, if originating, does not apply to translators, and low-power FM stations that are originating, and cable TV outlets, and satellite networks such as DirecTV and Dish 500 have to allow the national, they only have to carry the national streams because there's really no way that they could signify it state by state. And recently, XM and Sirius Satellite Radio started carrying the national level EAS alerts. Who doesn't have to participate? Or if you're a non-participation station, you have to sign off during an alert. And the problem is, did you become a non-participation station, you have to get a waiver from the FCC. And you have to still maintain your full array of emergency alert system equipment. So there's really no advantage into not participating. But there are exempt stations. And these are low-power translators for FM and TV because they're already repeating a signal that has an EAS alert system attached to it. So this is what you got here. This is pretty much the common equipment that everyone uses, is your Harris Sage EAS NDEC, as pictured here. Pretty much, this is the most common piece of equipment because the company Harris is sort of like a mail order catalog for broadcast stations, and this is what they carry. So any station that has like a Harris transmitter will have this. And there are other companies that make this stuff, like Gorman Redlich. They actually made my EBS decoder over there. Technologics, I believe, is one. And Megahertz makes EAS boxes for the cable industry. And I believe Triolithic also makes EAS boxes. And there are a couple of other manufacturers out there, but that's just all I could remember off the top of my head. Also pictured in this photograph, which I don't have a spare, so I couldn't bring it with me, is the Sage RM3 multi-receiver array. It can be configured, but by default it comes with an AM, an FM, and a National Weather Service receiver in it. So, what's in the box? It's got an AMD 80C188 processor, a Texas Instruments ADSP2115 digital signal processor device to do all the modem functions, and it can accommodate up to 6 receivers. It also has 6 COM ports for communicating to external devices, such as what we have displayed here is I have the multi-station relay panel, and I also have the VGS840 video character generator. And it also has computer I.O., but that's one of the 6 COM ports, and it just comes to the front panel and says computer, and that's about all it's got going for it. So, the EAS protocol. It consists of a header, which is pretty much the same alert tones that you heard, and we'll discuss what's in that a little bit later. And then you're supposed to follow that by a 1-second pause, and then an attention signal of the 853 and 960 hertz for 8 to 25 seconds, and then you can send your message, which is audio, video, or text messages. Such an we're pretty much technically doing all three, because we'll have a demo a little bit later that shows a little strip running across the top of the screen. And 120 seconds here, I should point out that national level alerts have no time limit. But most of these boxes have 2 minutes worth of memory for audio storage in them, which is why that's written into the protocol. And then we end with the EOM terminator, which three times, and which is, we'll discuss that a little bit later. So let's get started. We've got the preamble. This is a consecutive string of bits, just something so that the modem can sync up with the incoming audio and the limiters can start finding a level, and so it can sort of link to it. But it is transmitted before each header and each end of message code. Then after that, we have ZCZC. This is the identifier that indicates that it is a same or EAS alert. And why we use ZCZC is this bunch of letters does not appear in any word I have seen. And then we follow that by an organization code, which there were five, but now we're down to four. EAN no longer exists. PEP is used instead. And I had to argue this with the FCC compliance specialist at our recent county EAS meeting. And they didn't believe me until they found a recent copy of the Part 11. So after org is EEEE. This is the codes. The codes that specify what we're alerting people for. The most important one, of course, is EAN, EAT, NPT, and whatever the other national level was. And the other less important codes that are the ones that are routinely used are the National Weather Service area. Oh, yeah, check your local plan. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Such as the most important one of those is required monthly and required weekly tests. Pretty much we like to test our stuff and verify that it works once a week. And we've got tornado watches, tornado warnings, flash floods, floodings. And recently we've added what I like to call post-September 11th codes, such as hazardous materials emergencies, evacuation immediate, radiological hazard warning, law enforcement messages, local area emergency. And we also added our tsunami warnings, which if you don't live on a coast and you've got one of these, you probably want to take that out of the valid list of codes that your box will receive, because in this, it's right under required weekly test, and people who build their own messages inadvertently select that and will send out a tsunami warning. And now we've got PSSCCC, which this defines our geographic targeting of where we want the alert to affect. Now, the first number is P, which defines a county subdivision, such as northeast, northwest. It's like 1 through 9 for those. Check the rules, and it'll tell you what's what. Pretty much all you need to know is 0 is all. All of the county subdivisions. And SS defines state, which each state has a number designation. Once again, check your state code or your state, such as this state of Arizona EAS plan, which was distributed in 1997, by the way, and no one has updated it since, even though several places in the state have changed area codes, but that's a handy item. And CCC will define the individual counties or cities. Once again, there you look up where you want the thing to land. And now the next is plus TTTT. You replace the T's with the numbers, by the way. And this is the valid time of your message. Say, 24 hours, you'd put in there plus 2400. And it's in 15-minute increments for the first hour. Then after the first hour, it's in 30-minute increments for whatever reason. But I haven't tested the box here yet as to whether it would work with something like plus 0915. Might inadvertently explode. And the next is the time it was sent, which JJJ is your Julian calendar days, which I didn't see that it made it to the DEF CON CD, but just pretty much type into Google Julian calendar, and it'll pop up with what day, what month and day, and then it'll give you the number that you need to know. And don't forget here that there are 366 Julian days in a leap year, so that might throw off your calculations by one or two if you don't take that into account. And then you have the time in UTC when the alert was issued for. So I believe we're minus 8 hours, we're minus 7 hours here. So you have to send your alert for the next day and 7 hours into the future. And now we have the eight-character string of L's. This is where you put who you are. If you're National Weather Service, you put on there NWS. And if you're a radio station, put on your call sign. If you're an AM station, you don't have to follow it with a designator. But if you're an FM or a TV station, you have to follow it with, such as the example I've used here. It would be WOPR/TV. But because you're not allowed to use minus, because minus is part of the separators in the code. And then when we're done and we like what we've sent, we send the end of message code, which is a string of four ends, which also does not exist in any word that's in the dictionary, which sounds like. Yes, several people have heard that. So, what do you need for an example emergency alert notification? Well, we got our preamble. We got the ZCZC, and we will say it's a primary entry point. We are sending an emergency action notification, and I didn't look this up. The configuration software for my Sage Indec knew what that area was, which I believe that is included on your DEF CON CD, which you should have somewhere in your close proximity. And we want to make it last for 24 hours. And today is Julian Day 222. And we will issue it at 0000 hours, which is actually 5 o'clock p.m. yesterday. But because it's 24 hours long, it will be in effect until 5 o'clock p.m. today. And then our designator, of course, I don't have to tell you what that means. So, what type of security do we have on the EAS Indec? We no longer have an authentication list, so that's out the window. Pretty much the only security is these really goofy baud rates and really goofy tones. Like, take a look at that, 1562 and a half hertz. Well, I could see that, and that would divide by half a hertz, but the 2083.3, I mean, what is that? And just for comparison purposes, I have like the standard Bell 103 300 baud over a telephone network Of course, there are two sets of tones for that, originating and receiving. And then the Bell 202 standard, which is commonly used over radio, which is easy to understand, 1200 baud, or 1200 hertz, 2200 hertz as well. And, yeah, pretty much these goofy tones is their whole security thing. But as you'll discover, you sit down with a calculator and you understand why those tones are significant. They perfectly divide by common computer integers, except for the alert tones. But hey, those will be off half a hertz and no one will notice anyways. So, now that we know what the whole security system is to keep people from sending these tones, what can you use to send them? I like this unit because I helped design it. It is the Bionics Tiny Track 4, which is actually built in town by Bionics. And that's got on it an AT Mega 644. I'm not really a software guy, by the way. I'm more of a hardware one. But more importantly, it's got a 20 megahertz crystal to run the clock. It'll have transmitter control, and it's got AFSK encode, and it will decode because it was designed for APRS, which is automatic packet reporting system, I believe, which is pretty much the amateur radio version of LoJack. And you also got on there two COM ports for computer I/O, and you can have an optional LCD, and I actually had one, but I believe I left it up in the room, otherwise I'd show it to you. But you add on to there your LCD, four buttons, and if you're really good at writing software, bam, pocket in-deck. Just add a couple more batteries and a speaker, and away you go. But, you know, this is about, I believe the kit sells for $45 and another $12 for the case. But maybe you want something smaller. And the other night, I did a Google search and I found this little guy. Same gen. It's got an AT Tiny 45, 4 megahertz clock, and it's in code only. But, and there's also a code example at this, URL that's at the bottom here. But if you wanted to, you could get that down to like, I don't know, six components, because that's pretty much all you need if you want a hardware-based tone generator. And I'm sure some of you software guys might be writing code as we speak to do it with a sound card-based solution. So, say we're a local radio station. Who do we listen to for EAS alerts? Well, we listen to Local Primary 1, Local Primary 2, and the National Weather Service. Now, the FCC would like you to listen to two of the three. But most stations, because they'll have the extra receivers, listen to all three just in case one of the other two fails and they don't want to go in and mess with reconfiguring the index, such as jumpering wires over in the middle of the night. And it's always fun when you get one of those call. And oh, local LP1 is local primary, by the way, which is pretty much the highest power station that has backup facilities in your area. But this can local primaries can either be FM, AMs, or in some cases TV stations. So check your local listings. So, who's Local Primary 1 monitoring? Well, they're listening to the local sheriff, state PBS, because they issue some state alerts. They're also listening to the National Weather Center via radio networks that you probably had no idea existed. Army National Guard, National Weather Service, of course, and Local Primary 2. And I didn't have time to prepare a slide for this, but I just found out recently that National Weather Service also has to listen to Local Primary 1 or 2. So that gives the potential for a signal to go back upstream and then go back down from your point. So, pretty much, if you wanted to take something over, you would probably want to do it at the highest level. It's a tiered system. So you'd probably want to do it as high as you could get, such as at the microwave, or I'm sorry, wrong one. Like I said, check your local listings, such as this state of Arizona EAS plan, but it hasn't been updated. But there's useful information here, such as phone numbers for offices that shouldn't be published because they didn't bother to redact it before they PDF'd it. And like I said, those radio networks that you had no idea existed, as well as who National Weather Service is, or who local primary 1 and 2 are listening to, and who the local stations, the closer stations, are listening to after that. That's filled with good, useful information. And also, while you're digging around, see if you can find a county alert plan. This goes into more detail, and it'll also specify what codes everyone should have in their box and who to call in case this junk don't work. And, yeah. So, as high up on the chain as you can go, such as the microwave repeater station on the roof of the phone company in Washington, D.C. Unfortunately, Freddy's End was on the roof of the phone company in Van Nuys, California, and that does not exist. No, come on. But what does exist is the national primary stations, which we have 34 national primary tier 1 stations, and I should mention that 31 of these are AM. So already your audio sounds like ass. So, these are what's required for a national primary station is they have a diesel backup generator with 30 days, or tier 1 station, with 30 days of fuel supply, landline, satellite, and HF radio connectivity to FEMA operation centers, special EAS NDEC with unique codes, and I don't know what's so special about it. Because in my Sage EAS NDEC in here, all I had to do was flip one menu setting over to yes, and away it went. And they'd like them located just outside of a major city area for, you know, missile purposes. And you should have a fallout shelter with on-site food. Now, these stations are all tied in via telephone party line to the White House, so not only do we have the AM assness, we have telephone assness. So anything that's going to come from that end of the country is pretty much going to probably be unintelligible by the time it gets out here to the West Coast. And it's, don't know the phone number, but it's probably something in 202-486, so... Anyone with any hot sheets that have numbers that they don't know what is what in Washington, let me know. And if there's something that you've called and it says something like enter or it just beeps, that might just be it. And also, these national primary point, they were known as the primary entry points, but now we designated them as national primary, but we left PEP in the index because we didn't want to reprogram it, and it probably would freak out if it saw a two-letter code there instead of three. Oh, and we also got special lightning protection. Now, national primary tier 2, there's a whole three of them stations, which is everything a Tier 1 station has, except the fallout shelter. And they're planning 24 additional stations here in the near future, but yeah. And a Tier 3 station is going to have a direct EAS link from FEMA to the public radio network, or FEMA to XM radio satellite network. and pretty much XM radio receivers are being added to all Tier 1 and Tier 2 stations. Of course, I should remind you that this information here might be a little bit inaccurate because of the recent merger between XM and Sirius, so they might be getting Sirius receivers instead. And no special provisions like Tier 1 and Tier 2. They're just really on the fast track to listening for national level alerts. So how do we take advantage and get into a station? We use the FM capture effect, which any signal that is 15 dB or greater will capture the receiver. And I like to use 20 dB myself for calculations. And if it's less than 15 dB of separation, the signals will fight and sort of collide with each other. AM and single sideband signals mix, which is why that's used for aircraft work. So you probably don't want to try to force your way into an AM station. So by doing some math, I sort of cobbled together this chart here. We want to, for an example, we will target a local NOAA weather radio station on VHF. And using this chart, we'll figure out what the free space attenuation is. Of course, you need to know what the distance between the NOAA transmitter and the station's control point that you want to take over is. And if you're taking over FM or TVs, because sometimes these EAS signals hide in subcarriers, you need to know that, so you take those into account. And then the average receiver sensitivity is, for our purposes, it's like 117 dB down. So here's some VHF attack math. We've got our Class A station that we want to attack, running 100 watts of power, and there are 16 miles to the receive point, who has a three-element Yagi aimed at them. So also you might want to look around at the station and see if they've got any Yagis, because you might want to be in that path. And we've got no subcarrier because we're just taking over VHF. So we do this math, and we find out that the received signal is 48 dB. And so 20 dB after that is we need negative 28 dB of signal from our point to land at the station of interest. So how did we do that? We get your 100-watt VHF mobile radio.
With 100 watts of power!
Which the last three that I have were given to me, but I should point out, if they're crystal controlled, you probably want to order crystals on the fundamental, not the frequency it's actually on, because they might get suspicious that you ordered all eight NOAA channels. And we're going to be 1 mile away, which, you know, if it was me, I'd be sitting in their parking lot and looking at people running around, but you might be a little more safe. And we also got to take into account that three-element Yagi that's on their end. And we're going to be using a low-gain magnet mount on our car. And once again, no subcarrier. So here's the math to make that work. Our signal should be negative 22 dB by the time it lands at the station. So how does one take over? We got your message formatted right with your header, alert tones, and audio message less than 120 if you're using a weather code. If not, you don't have to worry about that. Then we got the location and the high amounts of power, and then, well, what happens? And now, give me a second while I hook this up for our demonstration. Real quick, who can tell me what is the significance of channel 37? Anybody? Hmm? What? Eep? No. No. There is something special about channel 37 in the United States. You, come forward. Step forth and be recognized. Correct. Channel 37 is specifically reserved for radio astronomy use in the United States. Ed, you read this in FCC Rules and Regulations 73.603, paragraph C. Yet despite that fact, there are about 50 people that apply to use Channel 37 in the United States a year, and right now there are 5 applications on file. Only joking, only joking. Because remember, Rick is bad for you. And I do apologize here. I thought that my box was going to run a message at the top of the screen, or at the bottom of the screen, so my titles are on the top of the screen. So there are, I got on titles when I am sending tones out of my DVD player into the box. So you can pay attention to the delay times if you so wish, but I come up here and oh, this is a fine film, by the way. If you haven't seen this, I highly recommend it. But I'm sending my header now, and my box should have taken action from it. And we're sending alert tones now.
As the Secretary General of the United Nations, an organization of 147 member states who represent almost all of the human inhabitants of the planet Earth, I send greetings on behalf of the people of our planet. We step out of our solar system into the universe seeking only peace and friendship, to teach if we are called upon, to be taught if we are fortunate. We know full well that our planet and all its inhabitants are but a small part of this immense universe that surrounds us, and it is with humility and hope that we take this step.
And that's what we got.
Houston, Apollo 11, the battery charging is complete, and the crew status report is as follows: VDR, CMP, LMD.
So, where are we going? EAS, the next generation? I kid you not, that is what they're referring to it as. Which was supposed to come out in 2007, and, you know, it'll go into the future until they come up with something better. And there we're trying to introduce something called CAP, the Common Alerting Protocol, which has a provision for audio, video, and text files. So theoretically, when they get the specifications finalized, your local box will plug into the internet, which is perfect. And theoretically, when you want to issue alert, you send an email to the station of your choice. And it also has geographic targeting, kind of like this has, but it has it more on a higher level, whereas the person originating, I understand, selects which stations he wants it to be heard on and which areas. And unfortunately, it's supposed to have digital encryption and signatures in it. But I'm sure the specifications for those will be published in a revised Part 11, so look for that in the near future. And the executive order that I referenced down here, we liked it, or the president liked it, and gave him 180 days to implement it. But as you know, it was delayed by Homeland Security, and last I heard, don't expect it for 3 years. And then we've got some other pilot programs here, such as Digital EAS, which pretty much no one can agree on anything, so everyone makes their own little standards. And pretty much turns it into a whole mess. That's probably why it's delayed 3 years, is because these people are meeting with these people over here and nothing's getting done. And would you like to know more? If so, I will be in the Track 2 Q&A room here in a quick, just as soon as I get all my marvelous junk off of the stage. And if not, I thank you for your time and try to enjoy yourselves the rest of the day. Thank you.